Welcome to the Ignite Your Life podcast. Here we interview successful people who are living a life filled with adventure, excitement, and fun. Learn where they've been. Explore where they are going. See what gets them out of bed in the morning. Find out what drives them. We will go through their lowest points. We will look at the opportunities and possibilities that are now presenting to them. Come on a journey of ignition. I'm your host, Leanne Blaney. For more information, go to ignitepodcast.com. Let's ignite. Mike Noon is the first of our 1,000 Ripple Effect authors to be interviewed. The theme of the book is all about what advice would you give to a 15 to 21-year-old making the transition from boy to man, girl to woman. This is a very important and very significant transition in their life. This is the time they break away from the family unit and become the man or woman they are going to be. This is when they work out what they stand for in life, what they value and what they are going to do. This is also when they start to live their life purpose. A Thousand Ripple Effects is creating a ripple effect for the people reading it. The stories in this book will be read by many people. The stories are designed to uplift, restore faith in humanity and touch the hearts of many. The proceeds raised from the sale of this book will then be used to create ripple effects for many projects. Build self-sustainable communities, build certified organic farms, provide employment opportunities, build the hospital, provide parenting skills training. So more about Mike. Mike Noon started life as an immigrant, taking from a very comfortable place to somewhere that he was foreign. This feeling of being slightly on the outside made him into a keen observer of human behaviour because we are strange yet wonderful creatures with illogical habits. He studied psychology at Goldsmiths College in London, dropped out because of financial constraints, then later went on to become a psychotherapist and transpersonal counsellor. 13 years later, when his business and life partner died of cancer, Mike moved to Thailand to sit on a rock and contemplate life. He moved from doing one-on-one work to one-to-many using the internet and online training platforms. Mike returned to New Zealand, became an NLP master practitioner and trainer. He also discovered the Power Marketing Program and recognised the massive opportunity it presented. Now he is taking the program out across the Asia Pacific. His vision is to enable 1,000 businesses to increase their revenue by a minimum of $1 million a year by 2020 and positively impact the lives of 1 billion people. Hi, Mike. Welcome to the Ignite Your Life podcast.
Hi, Leanne. It's lovely to be here.
I'm so excited to share your story. So shall we get started?
Yes, please. Yes.
Excellent. So do you want to tell us about where you are now? What's actually happening for you right now?
Right now, things are actually quite busy. I don't know if you can see behind me, but there's lots of cardboard boxes. We got served notice on where I live about 2 weeks ago. So we're moving house on Friday. Next Tuesday and Wednesday I'm teaching a 2-day seminar here in Wellington, New Zealand. Then on Friday I'm flying out to Singapore for 2.5 months. So it's a little bit manic.
Yeah, sounds busy times.
but it's fun. It's all good stuff.
Yeah. Do you want to tell us a bit about what led you to wanting to be on the podcast?
Well, I've been a friend of a lady named Stacey for a number of years, and she asked me to write a chapter for a book that she is kind of managing, I guess. And the book is called 1,000 Ripples, and it's an interesting project in that it's aimed at providing guidance to young people in their transition from like childhood to adulthood, and the sort of advice that in inverted commas wiser older people would offer them so that they can make that transition more easily. And so I'm one of those authors, and we're also making an attempt on the Guinness Book of Records for the publication of the most authors. So if we get the full 1,000, we'll manage to do that. And it's just very exciting. And one of the reasons that I sort of leapt at the opportunity is that, my transition from childhood to adulthood was somewhat traumatic. I got involved with some of the wrong people and definitely the wrong activities, and it really screwed me up for about 10 years. And it wasn't until I woke up in a hospital bed, you know, with drips and stuff hanging out of my arm, and every orifice in my body, I just realized my life wasn't working. So what the chapter that I've written is about, you know, basically about choosing the company you keep, and also some interesting strategies that people can use to make the best use of those around them.
Sounds fascinating. I can't wait to read it. So do you want to tell us a bit more about where you've been and what your story is to get to this point?
I come from a working class background. My dad was a carpenter. I had a very ordinary-ish growing up thing, and I started off, I got a trade because that's what you did in our family. In my mid-20s, I travelled to London for 3 months overseas experience to see my granddad because I was always very close to the guy. And 22 years later, I came back here to New Zealand. So it was a little bit longer than planned. I went through a whole raft of different kind of experiences and things. I was working in fast-track crisis management in the City of London in the mid-1980s when we had Big Bang, which was the deregulation of London Stock Exchange. So we're doing crisis management there. And, I got married and I got divorced and then I got married again. I had a son, James, and he's still in London. But eventually I saw that there's more opportunity on this side of the world than in like the UK or Europe or the United States, because I think that there's, that's a whole different conversation. So anyway, I came back here, and one of the things that kind of triggered that was my partner of 14 years, Maureen. I mean, we were business partners and life partners, and she died of cancer. So I came back here for a couple of months, and coming from London to New Zealand, it's a bit like sort of hitting a brick wall. It's very slow. And don't get me wrong, New Zealand is a lovely country. The people are beautiful. It's gorgeous, but it's slow. So I went to Thailand, and I sort of sat on a rock and contemplated life for almost 5 years. And I built a business there doing basically search engine optimization and things, and we were doing very well indeed. And then Google changed the rules of the game very unexpectedly. They brought in the Google Slap, and then they brought in Google Slap too. So we went from having like 14,000 hits a day to having absolutely zero traffic on all of our revenue streams went. And then the GFC, the global financial crisis, came along, and that cleaned out all the money we had in the banks. It's like, oh, so I've got my thongs or flip-flops, what do you want to call them? I got my shorts, I got my T-shirt, and so I came back here. So it's been quite an interesting journey. You know, I mean, I've gone bankrupt twice. Literally just, closing stand-up in, and it's always been just like a belief in the ability of a human spirit to overcome stuff that's helped bring things back.
So do you think that was a tipping point for change when you were over in Thailand with what Google did, or was it like a slow rumble leading up to that?
It was definitely one of the factors that I think was instrumental in later decisions, because the thing I realized is that when you let someone else have control of not so much of your message but of how you deliver it, then that's not a good position to be in. And so, I mean, I'll be honest, I'm a control freak, and I like to be in control of my life. I don't like being told what to do. Upset some people, it's got me into trouble before now and probably will again, but that's okay. And I think that people are very easily led by like governments and institutions and things, and they give away their power for the sake of not rocking the boat. And I think until such time as you're prepared to rock the boat, you're not going to get very far.
So what sort of challenges have you had along the way that might have led you thinking, oh, should I throw the towel in here?
I came back from Thailand in 2009, and for probably the first 6 or 7 years I made no money at all. And that was challenging. It was like a hand-to-mouth existence. You sort of wake up and you think, why the hell am I doing this? What's the reason that you have not just going out and getting a job. Because I mean, I could go out and get a job at a project manager or a tradesman and earn good money. But the thing that kept me going is this drive to be independent, to be free from any constraints, and to live a life I want on my terms. And while I'm working for someone else, I can't do that. That doesn't feel.
Yeah. So keeping your one foot in front of the other, is that more like the bigger vision of it all?
I've got an enormous vision, and that vision is to, I want to increase the revenues of 1,000 businesses by $1 million a year by 2020. And I want to make a positive impact on the lives of 1 billion people. So part of the way that we're doing that is, I'm off to Asia on the 20th of this month for about 3 months, and I'm going to be on a bit of a speaking tour there. But what we want to do is we want to set up like a microloan bank, very similar to like how Grameen Bank works in Bangladesh. So that they make loans of typically $10 to $20 to women, and only to women, because I think the focus that women have got is more on the family and the community rather than going down the pub with the boys. And so we want to make an impact that way. We're also going to be meeting up with an organization in Siem Reap in Cambodia called Helping Hands. And that was started by an Australian lady actually called Deborah. And she was a wedding photographer from Sydney who had gone to Cambodia for a 3-month trip and just fell in love with the place and phoned her dad up and said, "Hey, Dad, sell the business." And this is like a serious business. She was turning over in excess of $1 million a year. She said, "Sell the business because I want to stay here. I've met this Cambodian teacher and we're going to start a school." So that school just started off, it's just like a grass hut type thing, and they waited for kids to come for classes, and of course they didn't, because they're all behind the buffalo, you know, in the rice paddies all day. So I thought, well, how do we do this? And they put solar panels on the roof, and they put lighting and batteries in, and the kids would go to school in the evening. And but then all sorts of stuff, they put in, you know, safe drinking water supplies, but they have installed over 2,000 flushing toilets in this village. They have arranged for over 2,000 bicycles to be distributed to the villagers so they can go and see and reap and earn money in the various businesses there. It's just a fabulous, fabulous sort of organization. And you know, so we are going to be talking about ways we can assist them with things like marketing and promotions for them, but we also want to support the kids by providing scholarships, because you know, these kids, they're literally growing up in places where, you know, they start life with just one bowl of rice between maybe a family of six and maybe two tiny little fish, and now these people are growing their own vegetables, and it's wonderful. So yeah, we want to be supporting the kids with scholarships and means to go to university and become doctors and teachers and lawyers.
That's awesome. So what new possibilities have opened up for you from what you've been doing?
Well, we're going through a really, really exciting period. I mean, this launch into Asia has been something I've kind of been thinking about and planning for about 10 years. And now we've got a large network of people like in the NGO sector and also in business and different networks. So the possibility that we are engaged in making real is just completely transforming business and marketing and how people look after themselves right across the Asia Pacific region. So you know, that's 4.44 billion people whose lives we can potentially make better, give them greater autonomy, just able to make better decisions based on what they want rather than what their circumstances dictate they've got in terms of choices. So, you know, I mean, I'm out to make everybody as wealthy as I possibly can.
Oh, that's awesome. I like it. So what about personally? What's the most exciting thing you're looking forward to in the future?
The way that I've sort of I've structured things is that I will be involved in the business probably 5 or 6 days a month, and the other 20, 24 days a month will be involved in doing things I want to do, like with family, with friends, and with communities. I want to buy some land and build myself a nice off-grid house, because I think the days of things like cheap oil and easy energy are coming to an end, despite what Donald Hairdo from the United States of America tells us. I mean, that's all hype and, dare I say it, BS. And so there are some very radical changes coming to society and the world. And so I think it's sensible to be able to be independent in terms of like food production, energy production, and also your community. I think the days of like mega cities and stuff are probably going to come to an end, and we're going to go back to much smaller communities, which will be nicer. So we've got relationships with people who are into things like permaculture, photovoltaics, and it's kind of the hippie thing. I've been involved in these sort of communities before, and by and large they don't work, because most of the tasks tend to get done by half a dozen people. Everyone else stands like cheers on, yeah, go sweep that driveway and dig those weeds up. And I'm part of a local community garden, and we're sort of growing food for the poor, and I'm quite sort of disappointed, because we were there yesterday and we dug up 24 kilos of kumara, your sweet potatoes, but not one of the poor people was there to help us. So I was like, maybe not.
All right, well, let's have a change in pace and do the speed round.
Okay.
What's your favourite book?
Another Roadside Attraction by Tom Robbins. It's basically about some people who steal the body of Christ from the Vatican, from underneath in the catacombs, and all the political, social, and sort of religious implications. It's a really good read. Mm. So highly recommended.
How about a mental figure that's helped you the most?
It would probably be my former business partner, Maureen, because she was, she grew up in a very abusive place. She was, gave me lots of hard love, which is very nice. And so there's also the other variety, there's the soft love as well. But I mean, yeah, she was very instrumental in shaping who and what I am. And just the fact that, you can do anything you want to if you just believe in yourself enough and just stick to it and don't give up,
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. What about a daily ritual that works best for you?
Daily rituals. I'm not really... I'm not a particularly organized person. I've got a VA who does my organizing for me. I think probably the most important thing I do on a daily basis, think about what is it that people, whether it's as customers or clients or just your community, really wants and really needs. Because I think the way the media and stuff sort of shapes us, it has made us into quite a selfish and quite separated society. And I think that there's so many opportunities to connect with people and, to add to their lives and have them add to yours. So that would probably be about the closest.
Yeah, I like it though. That's great.
Yeah.
What about a favourite food?
Thai food, definitely.
Yeah.
I've got some chili plants out in the garden there. They're quite seriously hot. And, as I say, I lived in Thailand for almost 5 years, and the one thing I loved was just going out. I mean, the town I lived in, we had just under 3,000 restaurants that you could choose from. Then there's all the roadside stalls, and, it's good.
Nice. Do you like the country or the city?
I like both. I mean, I decided about 15 years ago before I came back to New Zealand, but I wanted to be somewhere that was within like 20 minutes drive of the facilities of the city. I like theatres, which I love, and cinemas and restaurants. But so far enough out in the sticks that I can just go away and sit on a beach or whatever. So interestingly enough, on Friday, I'm moving out to a place called Eastbourne, which is on the eastern side of Wellington Harbour. And so you've got Wellington on the west. So I can get a ferry across to Wellington for $10, and that takes about half an hour. Or I can drive up to the lower hut to do my shopping and stuff. But it's absolutely gorgeous. It's literally at the end of the road. Next stop is Antarctica.
Oh, wow. Love it. Love it.
Gorgeous.
What would be the biggest piece of advice to give to others to help them make change in their life?
I would suggest that if you want to live a life you love, but you design it around how you want your life to be every day. A lot of the literature and media that comes particularly out of the United States and Europe is you've got to make it big, you've got to have all the money and all this. I don't even know, money's great. I love having lots of money. You go into a shop and say, I don't want that one. I want the big one on the top shelf, the one with the big shiny knobs, yeah, and the big speakers, yeah, that one. And have you got a bigger model than that? It's great. But money is just a tool. It's just a way of storing energy that you've expended and transferring it into the future. So it'd be basically what makes your heart sing. And there's an exercise I sometimes take clients through, which is your perfect average day.
Yes.
And I got it off a guy called Frank Kern, who you may or may not have heard of. Mm-hmm. Frank's an interesting character. And basically, it's like, what is the day that you could, it doesn't have to be anything special or wonderful, but what is the day that you could stand living and having every day for the rest of your life? And it's a really fun exercise.
Yeah.
And then once you worked out what that day is, what do you need to do to get it? I see a lot of people who sort of compromise on themselves, and I can understand how it is. Our whole educational system is geared towards dumbing people down, despite this stuff about, you've got to have a degree, which would be absolutely worthless by the time you finish it, because the knowledge you've learned has now been superseded. But we're taught to sort of kowtow to others. And I'm not saying don't be polite, but don't let other people make decisions for your life. I mean, you're the one who's living it. You're the one who has to wake up every day and get out of your bed and step into your world. And
yeah, I love that. It's something I do with my clients as well, is definitely the ideal average day, because all of them don't know what they want. They can always say, this is what I don't want. So you say, what do you want? And they go, oh, I don't know. So they'll love that exercise. It's very, very useful to get them thinking about the future and how they'd like to be living.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. And the crazy thing is, most people put more thought into what they're going to buy their partner for Christmas or where they're going to go for a holiday than they do for the rest of their life.
Yeah, exactly.
Crazy.
It is. All right, last question. So, if you had a time machine, what would you go back and do differently or tell your former self?
I think I would go back and tell myself that, A, it's going to be all right. Because there were times when I seriously sort of thought, shit, is this going to be the rest of my life? If it is, I'm not sure I want to be here. So I'd go back and tell myself, yeah, it's going to be all right. And yes, there's going to be a ton of crap you've got to dig your way out of and through and all the rest of it. But at the end of it, you're going to be living the life you want, where you want, when you want, with who you want, for as long as you want, doing what you want. There's a story about a Middle Eastern king, and he instructed his three sort of wizards to come up with an incantation or a spell that would guarantee that his life was going to be okay. So after a long time, the wizards came back to him and had like a ring with this magic spell written on the inside. And what was written on the inside of the ring was, "This too shall pass." And just knowing that, it is magical.
Yeah.
And it's powerful.
Extremely powerful. Yeah. Well, thank you so much today for your valuable time, Mike. Would you like to give us the best place to contact you, and we'll end it there?
Probably the best place to contact me is either via Facebook, where I am going by the name of Michael Ross Noone, N-O-O-N-E, or alternatively, you can, I won't give you a website because there's a lot of them. And but it's been really wonderful speaking with you today, Leanne, and thank you very much for your time.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you so much. Igniters, Mike shared a lot of the challenges he has been through, starting from the transition from childhood to adulthood and also how his life partner passed due to cancer. His view on designing your own life how you want it every day is powerful. To contact Mike, go to his Facebook page, Michael Ross Noone. If you want to get more power from your communication and become a people reading whiz, go to my website, leannblaney.com.